I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Butterfly in the sky with robotic wings and eyes. Let's take a look, it's in a book, dirty show book club. Books are like comic books, but with more words and brain pictures. Dirty show book club, it might go anywhere. Would crucify
Hey guys, welcome to a new episode of Nerdy Show Book Club. What you just listened to was our amazing book club theme. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hi, I'm Hex.
Hi, I'm Brandon.
I'm Colin.
And we are going to learn you some books today, children. Shoe mercy.
That's right, Shoe Cap read The Help.
No, I did not. I read The Help manual to all of Photoshop. God, I don't need that
destroy
shit.
Destroy your brain.
He's going to read an excerpt from it later.
I'm gonna recite all the hotkeys.
F1.
Well, guys, the response to Nerdy Show Book Club has been fantastic. In the interim between this episode and the last, we actually got 3 pieces of fan mail.
So was that a pun when you said fantastic?
Well, no, but okay. I'll take it. Why not?
Chortle.
Cha-ching.
Chortle.
Is that a Pokemon?
Go, yes. Chortle!
Chortle!
Chortle! Anyway.
Oh my god.
Certainly someone's done that.
Spit they on must the have. Mic, sorry. Okay.
We are going to talk about the book that the community read together, To Your Scattered Bodies Go.
Go!
To Your Scattered Bodies Go!
See, now, is that like a statement? Because I'm not versed in the literary world like you guys. Is it like literally a command? Like,
you
to your scattered bodies
attention.
Go? Or,
last episode,
say,
when I told you that it was actually a reference to...
Hex, do I ever pay attention?
No.
I don't even know where I am.
Who's it by? I've forgotten. Who's it by? What's it?
I forgot, dude.
You have the book right in front of you.
I don't have the notes. Oh. It's not
Philip
on there.
Jose Farmer.
It's Philip Jose Farmer. Hugo Award-winning writer.
Philip Jose Farmer.
We're not
did he win a Hugo for this book?
I don't know if this one of the Hugo... Hugo Award Best Novel.
There you go.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about To Your Scattered Bodies Go. We're going to be talking about all the books that we've read between last episode and this episode. Doing a reading from an adaptation of a film, as we always do, and reading these fan letters. So, Hex, who you got for us? Who wrote in?
First one is from Rackety Daniel, who is actually from Serbia.
All the way from Serbia.
Yeah, so I am a new listener, but after doing so for a few episodes of your book club, I found myself going through some of your backlog. I would just like to take the time and thank you for doing a book review podcast, for there are far too few good ones. Having searched around, I have found you have not, from as far as I can tell, handled 2 of my favorite series of books. The first being urban fantasy and a type of book that is not often very good, but this is a great example of how to do it right. This is the Dresden Files, who was...
Dresden Files recently fought a long, hard battle against Paranoia XP in our tabletop role-playing game RPG support drive, where we were going to do a one-off episode of the chosen system by the fans. The Dresden Files tabletop system was a hard fight. I only know Dresden Files because... of the television show, which I've never watched, but also I've never heard good things about, but apparently the books are amazing.
Yep, the books are amazing.
Yeah, I actually have I have Stormfront sitting on my bookshelf, awaiting to be ridden.
What's that? Ridden?
Let me finish this letter. Let me finish
to
this
my
letter.
Brain.
Raggedy Daniel, sorry for interrupting. The Dresden Files. I would love to hear something on these books from you guys, or at least knowing that I have pointed them out to you, if you do not, in fact, already know about them. I always find it hard to suggest a good place to start off. The first three books are a lot older, and you can definitely tell that Jim Butcher is learning. Book five is usually in everyone's top favorites, and it does not have too many spoilers. The second book series is dark fantasy for mature readers, as I like to consider it, as it does not use the usual things that annoy me about dark fantasy. The emo angst, the Black Company series of books by Glenn Cook. I would suggest to anybody with a love of reading to try this. And if he does not have one, they are a great place to develop one. Seeing that you're on a sci-fi arc, maybe to contribute a bit of something there, perhaps, check into Vada's War Witch. I consider it to be one of the best military sci-fi books I've read. Thanks for the show from a new listener out in Serbia. Greetings, Raggedy Daniel.
Thanks so much for writing in, Raggedy.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
This is by Sammy Nadehart. It's from Sammy.
Sammy!
Hi, guys.
Who I'm pretty sure this is Sammy, who I'm friends with on Tumblr.
So, Sammy writes, I would like to recommend a book, well, a book series, but baby steps here. If you haven't already, y'all should check out Pawn of Prophecy by David Eddings. It's the first of the Belgariad series, which is 5 books long. There's also a second tie-in series called The Malorian, which is 5 books as well, along with 2 follow-up books, Belgareth the Sorcerer and Polgara the Sorceress. It's a lot of books. Long ago, the storyteller claimed, in this first book of the Belgariad, the evil god Torak drove men and gods to war, but Belgareth the Sorcerer, there's a lot of complicated names I can't fucking pronounce, god damn it. God, I should spell everything out phonetically. But Belgareth the Sorcerer led men to reclaim the orb that protected men of the West. So long as it lay at Riva, the prophecy went, men would be safe, although maybe Riva, I don't know. But Garion did not believe in such stories. Brought up on a quiet farm by his aunt Paul. It's P-O-L. I don't know. Let's just say by his aunt Paul. Paul. By his aunt Paul.
His auntie Paul.
Brought up on a quiet farm by his auntie Paul. How could he... know that the... know that the apostate planned to wake Dread Torak, or that he would be led on a quest of unparalleled magic and danger by those he loved, but did not know. Taken from Amazon.com. He writes because he says he can't summarize for anything, and clearly I can't read without proofreading. She. I'm sorry. Sammy is obviously a feminine name. I knew that. At least once a year. Okay, I skipped a line. Continuing. 3, 2, 1, fuck you. This has been one of my favorite series since I first read it when I was probably 9 or 10. I reread it at least once a year, and I highly recommend it. Happy reading.
Well, thanks for writing in, Sammy. I don't think any of us have checked out that particular series, but we'll keep an eye out for it. Definitely something of a commitment with that many books, but hey, if it's as awesome as you say, then it won't be like anything, will it? Next up is a short letter from Tolan, an old guard from the Nerdy Show fan crew. Hey guys, I was just perusing Hex's Tumblr account, and I noticed that he recommended this address to suggest a book for the book club. That address is, of course, info@nerdyshow.com, where you can submit whatever you want. Also, there's plenty of book club threads on the forums that we'll look into. So I thought I'd toss in my 2 cents. Have you heard of the book Ready Player One by Ernest Cline? Well, don't jump the gun, Colin. It's the same guy who wrote the Fanboys movie. The book is amazing. Half the story is this dystopian cross between The Matrix and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. The other half is a long love letter to nerd culture in the 80s. This book references everything from the Tomb of Horrors to the Japanese Spider-Man show Spider-Man to War Games to Buckaroo Banzai and many, many more. Even if you don't use it for the show, read this book or check out the audiobook. It's read by Will Wheaton.
Oh my god, what?
Yep.
Okay. Will, right. Wheaton?
Will Wheaton?
Yes.
Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton.
No, Tolan, that is going to be the, not to give it away, but the next time the rotation comes around to me, that will be the book that I recommend. I read it, actually, I would talk about it this month, but I'm not going to because we're going to talk about it when we actually do the, you know, in the monthly
read-along.
Yeah. Well, you said not to give it away, but you did just
give it away. Yeah, you did actually do that.
Oh, Colin, I hate you.
You blew it, kid.
Well, I mean, I'm not gonna talk about
it. Great shot, kid. That was one in a million.
But I'm just saying.
I'm just saying.
Don't worry, man. I recognize how great that book is, and we will talk about it at length.
Anyway, let's. We'll cut to a track, and when we get back, we're going to talk about To Your Scattered Bodies Go.
So what I have is Tetris Plays You.
Oh, shit.
Clearly, this is a Russian thing.
In April 1st, there was this thing called Vocal Clocked Remix, which was the OC Remix joke of the year. Their April Fool's Day joke. It's kind of heavily coordinated by our good pal, Level 99. And he was on half the tracks. And this track recently surfaced up on the OC Remix feed of tracks that they publicly release. And not many of the Vocal Clock remixes have actually seen the light of day since April 1st. But this one did. And I'm like, oh, huh, this gave me a laugh again. I guess I'll showcase this. So this is done by Block Party, which features Jillian Aversa, Palpable, Diotrance, Zircon, and our boy, Level 99. So it's a great track. It's pretty hilarious to listen to. Enjoy.
Нет. Русский. You know, back in the mother country.
Is this where I come in?
I am the square. You can put me over there, in the middle or the corner. I don't care.
Vodka.
Look at me, perfect symmetry. Rotate all you want, it's the same you see. Guess I'm stuck here now.
Mes coiffons y elles for I am la belle enchantée. My design just fits so well. Sleek physique, darling, it's très chic. Ah, I cleared to rose. Was that not what you see?
Lots of pieces. We're in trouble. Height increases.
I, you are wonder why that is so many lines make me want to cry.
Oui, oui.
What is goal I fall into hole. You have goals, need clearings, you call pole.
Thank you.
We don't have to stand for this.
Yeah, this is like total crap.
That's it. I quit.
Me too.
Ouais, vive la résistance!
Oh, back to Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Tetris too hard.
All right, so the book we read in between this episode and the previous Nerdy Show book club was To Your Scattered Bodies Go.
Yeah.
By Philip Jose Farmer.
Philip Jose Farmer, yeah.
Si.
Muchas gracias.
Now, Hex, this is your book choice, so kindly introduce it to the listeners, please.
every single person who has ever lived wakes up.
Or has ever died.
Or has ever died, we should say. Good job.
Thank you.
Good job, Brandon. Who has ever died wakes up on the bank of this impossible planet where it is just wrapped around and around and around by this river. And along the river are strange natural delineations, kind of like paddocks, of unscalable mountains with this valley, this idyllic valley where people hang out and where everything is given to them. And it's kind of like a heaven because whatever, they're given all this gift and drugs and whatever they want daily. They don't have to do anything. And it follows the adventures of real-life hero, adventurer, and badass and not-so-good person, Richard Francis Burton, as he goes, you know what? Fuck heaven.
Richard Burton's gonna shake the pillars of heaven.
At the very first chapter, and we're going to, in our little intro, we're going to spoil it for you, but it's chapter one, so it's not much of a spoiler. He wakes up during some weird procedure, and he sees everyone before they wake up on the banks of the river. And so, making him think, this is not some supernatural phenomenon. This is something
There's more. Something else going on behind the scenes.
Something more sinister. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this book, it's it was written, when was it written, like the 60s, 70s?
1971.
And so it has a little bit of future stuff in there, because though Francis Burton, he died a long while back. Like
in the 1800s, I believe.
He, 1890. He encounters people from present day who know what like televisions are. He encounters an alien who died on Earth via sort of somewhat accidentally, unwillingly wiping out a huge portion of Earth's population. And it's weird because it's like, it's not everyone who's ever lived universally, it's everyone who's ever lived on Earth. Wakes up on the shore and they're naked, but they've got this weird stick attached to their wrist and they can plug it into a module that then supplies them with a random assortment of food and weird-ass supplies that you don't really need, like cigarettes.
Well, it's not a stick. They actually have a giant cylinder connected to them.
It's not a giant it's a cylinder, but it's like the size of, like, a lunchbox.
They said it was 2.5 feet tall.
Is it 2.5?
I just read that.
It's a big tubular lunchbox you can kind of beat people up with if you want to.
Yeah.
And also, no one has any hair.
They start off with
hair.
And it does grow, but no facial hair grows.
Spoilers.
So that's the general plot of it. If you actually want to read the book and don't want it spoiled for you, just click ahead to the next section of this this podcast, because we're going to get into it right now.
What were your guys' thoughts on it? Because
I'm the only one here who hasn't finished it. So let me explain what I'm going through.
Unload, please.
Now, it's not a very long book. It was only like 200 and something pages. I read a fourth of it in, you know, like 2 hours, if even. And, you know, it's not that long. You could finish it in a day. When I first started reading the book, it reminded me a lot of a video game. I know what you're saying, what the fuck are you talking about? But if you've ever played the old, like, puzzle games or the point-and-click games, kind of, like, Myst, it reminded me of that. You know, you start off, you have no idea what's going on, you find these weird objects, you find this weird environment, you find these tools, people are speaking different languages, you don't know what to use on what or where to go, and it's kind of like a puzzle game. They slowly have to figure out what everything does and what they should be doing, and I really, really enjoyed that aspect. Basically, half of what I've read so far is just, you know, eating and skinning people, which is also good. No book has ever reminded me of Colin more than this so far, and I'm only a fourth of the way through it. So
I think it's important to mention that Colin and Brandon have an interesting relationship, or a pact, I guess you would call it.
We're just on my side, really.
Right, we're at some point...
No, I've agreed to this.
At some point, Brandon is going to skin Colin and wear him as a coat. I don't remember how or why this started.
He's going to be alive.
Okay.
I'm going to keep him alive when it happens, because the skin is better that way. It's fresher. It's
right.
There's more fear in the skin, which is what I need.
That's true.
But I don't know where it came from. Lots of years of deep-seated hate, regret, guilt.
I can support that.
Yeah.
All I know is that it started in high school, and it has never stopped.
It started with me fucking a stuffed animal tiger and ending with me wanting to skin Colin.
Yes. It's true. I don't know where that comes from, but there it is. But I have told Brandon that when I am old...
But then your skin will be wrinkly, Colin. Get serious.
You said it. Well, whatever the case.
I say a lot of things I don't mean.
When I'm older, and I just see Brandon... Well, I see... This is the image that I have, is that I'm in a wheelchair, and I'm like 90 years old or whatever it is. And then Brandon walks up to me, and he still looks exactly the way that he is, because Brandon doesn't age. and he's brandishing a knife, and I'm just like, okay, and there it is.
He closes his eyes, and I get to work.
So
that's right.
Burton is definitely skilled in this, because he just leaps on the chance to make leather out of human skin when the first person dies.
As soon as someone dies, like, everyone's brought back, no one knows that you can even die again. Suddenly someone is dead, and his first reaction is, we could totally use that dead body to make tools out of. And everyone's just looking at him like, what the fuck? Who is this guy? What is wrong with him? And he's just like, what? We got nothing else. And they're like,
yeah, for real.
Okay.
And it sound logic, but it's not.
But it's just like the first thing he jumps to conclusion is like, I'm going to use this dead body. Not like, what happened? Or, wow, that sucks. No, I'm going to use this body to skin.
Yes, of all things, Francis Burton is definitely very practical and very pragmatic.
One of the interesting things that goes into understanding this is that it's this basically fan fiction with historical figures.
Yeah.
In the last episode, Hex outlined a little bit of who Burton was in reality, and they touch on it in this book in this kind of... I mean, I get the impression that the dude who wrote this was either...
Total Burton fanboy.
Right. Well, I think he's a historian fanboy, and they mention there's a character in this book who's like from modern times... and knows an awful lot about Burton, and had researched him, and was gonna write a book on him. And that's totally the author in this book. This definitely smacks of...
Paul Frigget, was that his name?
Yeah, it was Frigget. Frigget's like, I was gonna write a book on you at some point, but it didn't happen.
Instead, that is straight up Philip Jose Farmer.
Okay.
Straight up. I mean, what are his initials? Paul Frigget.
Philip Farmer. Oh, look at that. You're so smart. Did you look at that online?
I knew that while reading that.
Well, then you're genuinely smart.
I wouldn't go that far.
I stand erection.
So
I stand erect.
It's interesting that this is basically historical fan fiction in another setting. And I mean, sure, why not? Roll with it. Nothing wrong with that. And Burton isn't the only historical figure. Like we said, it's every person who's ever died. So the next person you meet is, weirdly enough, Alice Liddell, the former young girl who Lewis Carroll based Alice in Wonderland off of. And what's weird is they don't really go into it ever, but there it is. Yeah, she's like she's the lead romantic interest. Go fig.
Well, Frigget alludes that he knows who it is, but he's like, but we'll get to that later. And you're like, oh, okay.
They don't.
Yeah, they don't. It's like, that's for the reader, not the
characters. And I've read the whole series, and they don't.
Oh, okay. How many books are there in this series?
Last I counted, there were...
This is the Riverworld series.
Five. And really, you can stop at four.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
I really wanted to read five.
No, I won't take your word for it.
And actually, in the this book ends with some statement that's like, and in the next Riverworld book, follow the adventures of Samuel Clemens as he builds a steamboat or something.
Yep.
So
that's actually my favorite book.
The second book is fan fiction about Mark Twain.
And it's really well done. I love it. Fabulous Riverboat is a fabulous book.
It's neat, especially since Burton is a figure whom, prior to last episode when you talked about him, I didn't even actually know about him. And he's quite accomplished and a very eccentric and exceptional historical figure.
Well, he did defeat Lopan that one time.
That was his son, Jack.
Oh,
okay. Oh, it's his great-great-grandson, rather. What's interesting about this book is that they tell you some things, but they don't tell you everything about him. I think it really benefited an awful lot of your lead into this book, Hex, in last episode, actually. I think I would have been considerably more lost had it not been for that, as far as understanding the main character goes.
As a bit of a history nerd myself, back when I first read this, back before my household had the internet, we actually had Encyclopedia Britannica. And so I actually read up on Richard Francis Burton while I'm like, who is this? I'm so intrigued. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's a real guy!
See, that's the good thing about this book is I don't know who the fuck any of these people are, but... when you read it, it makes you want to go back into the real world and go, wow, okay, let me check out who these people actually are. Because I didn't do that before.
Wow, Kaz the Caveman was real.
He wrote a biography?
I mean, it's just a picture of him stabbing a cow, but
that's a good autobiography.
Yeah, it's not bad.
But have you smelled it? It's really all about smelling
it. Piece of it, so...
Yeah. Overall, I enjoyed the experience. It was an enjoyable read. It was very strange. And like Direwolf said on the forums, you really have no idea where it's going to go next. It's kind of all over the place, and that's a good thing.
It's not as predictable as most books are nowadays.
You could tell the guy was just writing because he wanted to be writing. It was a very passionate project. So it kind of makes it a shame that when it ends, it's very much like there's always going to be a follow-up book.
Right.
It's not self-contained.
Like I said, the first four books, they really feel like the story. Once you get through 1, 2, 3, 4, you're like, wow, I actually get it all.
And number 5 is Dollar Dollar Bills, y'all.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's Dollar Dollar Bills, y'all. That's the fan fiction equivalent of you're typing with one hand at that point.
What is he doing with the other hand?
He's so excited over the things he's having these historical figures doing.
Oh, that typing with one hand.
And then the keys get jammed and the words come out all wrong.
But, I mean, until then, it's really cool. I really enjoyed it.
What does he make people do in the fifth book?
Yeah, why is the fifth book so bad, Hex? Because we're obviously never going to get to the fifth book.
You should just read it. You should.
Who bones in the fifth book, Hex?
I don't even remember who survives to the fifth book. Because
is it the alien?
Jesus bones Mark Twain.
But don't take our word for it.
Da 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 da. LeVar. Burton.
Oh, LeVar Burton. LeVar Burton.
Colin, what were your thoughts on the book?
I guess I liked it. Honestly, for me, the book was relatively, since it was so all over the place and it was obviously not leading towards a conclusion, it felt really slow. I'm also a slower reader, so books that, if they're not like really, 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 really well paced, I find them slow. So that's just my personal opinion. But I did enjoy a lot of the ideas in this book. I did enjoy how in this story you have this world where they're basically rebuilding humanity in any way that they necessarily decide how to rebuild humanity, like the groups of different cultures coming together and going to war or building a society like the Nazis, you know, building concentration camps and just redoing all of that shit that they did just 'cause. All that stuff I found really interesting. Also, the stuff where he was basically just killing himself over and over and over and over and over again, like 700 plus times to get to the different part, get to the end of the river.
Yeah, let's discuss.
I haven't gotten to that part yet, and that sounds so something I would like.
Here's what, for a long time, because they show up and they don't know what's going on, there isn't exactly what you'd call a plot. And then Burton decides what his quest in this other world should be. It starts with the idea of, I need to find the people who I know are masterminding this whole situation. But then it also turns into, I know this river ends somewhere. And at one point, he hears rumors about it, and then at one point, he actually sees this big tower, like, at the end of the world, and by coincidence, shows up there, and is killed almost immediately by some, basically, Yetis, who've been brought there because they're an offshoot of the human race.
Yeah, like some prehistoric, you know, race.
And so he gets killed by Yetis while hanging out with his Nazi buddy.
Hermann Göring,
Nazi pal. And,
crazy Nazi pal.
Yeah, really.
Crazy.
Really, like...
That fucker is nuts.
How much do you know about Göring, Hex? Like, I haven't read up
on
him.
Like, seriously?
But...
Seriously? I was... I would love to do a study and write some kind of wacky adventure involving Hitler and the higher echelon of the Nazi party, because those fuckers were all Jack Kirby Stanley level villains. Like, they were all fucked up in their own special way. Hermann Göring was no exception to this.
So all of his insecurities and weird character traits, they're not just speculation.
That's not Sterling Jose Farmer just poking fun at the resident Nazi. That's him going, let's take an actual fucked up member of the Nazi party and continue to make fun of him.
Yeah, this guy's pretty broken. It turns into comedy after a while. Like, he's so tragic and self-destructive.
How do we take these really evil Nazis and make them a fun, loving comedy kind of guy? Let's do it. I became my BFF Göring.
Well, it's actually really, like, really tragic because he becomes addicted to the stuff that they call the dream gum.
Yeah, because they supply the people with narcotics in their grails, which is the name of their lunch pail shafts.
Dream gum?
Dream gum, yeah.
Okay,
dream gum,
it sounded differently. I was going to say, I wouldn't eat that. But you never know, given the circumstances.
But they, anyway, so they chew this dream gum, and it gives them, like, horrible nightmares of basically, like, past experiences of their lives, like, really traumatic experiences of their lives that they end up dreaming. And as he continues to be addicted to this dream gum, he then has worse and more frequent of these horrible, nightmarish, very realistic dreams of things that have happened to him in the past. So that continues to make him crazy as he can't differentiate between what is real and what is not.
And Burton somehow gets his respawn, because you die and you come back and you die and you come back and you die and you come back. He gets his respawn accidentally connected with this crazy guy. And And so things get a little weird for a while there, until they get off sync with each other, which I thought was actually a very bizarre and interesting part of the book. Those two guys, like
the Burton and Goering comedy hour.
Yeah, and then eventually, like the people who are masterminding all this, they realize that Burton's trying to find out who they are, and a bunch of weird things happen with like a guy who may be a traitor to the people who are masterminding it. They eventually figure out that Burton's trying to screw with them, and so they start hunting him. And Burton's way to evade them is, all right, I'll drown myself in the river over and over and over again.
Haha, joke's on them.
And just like, he's like, reset button, reset button, reset button. Like, Burton's such an interesting character psychologically, and he's already been like prepared by his insane life as a human being that he's like, all right, so human life doesn't matter? All right, I'll just keep killing myself.
Like,
find
he's
me
the
now.
Kind of guy who lived his life with a, like, I don't know if they existed yet, but you could imagine he'd be living with a cyanide pill, like, I'm ready to go at any moment, fucker. Like, bring it. I don't fucking care.
Well, yeah,
care.
It's because it's like he's using it as transportation. He knows that he's going
to
survive.
Like, but he, like, even in life, he's like, life is so disposable that he didn't give a shit about himself. And the moment it doesn't matter, life does continue, he's like, oh, well then fuck it.
Actually, that's really interesting, because I find that he's the exact opposite. I feel like he's exceptionally about himself. He's very self-absorbed, where he's searching for the end so that he can fulfill this insane desire to discover, and for him to discover this thing. And that I feel like he
wouldn't be good enough if someone else did it.
That's true.
Well, yeah, and so the he using this death transportation machine is his way of just, you know, a means to the end, not necessarily that he finds his life disposable.
I can sum Burton up in like one, possibly two sentences. In like the first chapter, he even says that he doesn't believe in any god besides himself, and he just always assumed that the universe would cease to exist only when he dies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty much him in a nutshell. Also, my big question, Cap, is does one ethical hang lower than the other?
Well,
and
actually,
that's my joke.
Actually, yes, the traitor. He hangs out with the lowlies.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. And you actually find laughing, out that it turns out to be this: the ethicals actually do hang out with the rest of the people on the world to basically study them and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool.
It is cool. And I guess now would be a good time to do a reading of one of these sections from the book.
Oh, can we do the part where they just end up just having sex with each other? Because if there's a fanboy section of the book, it's where all of these historical figures fuck each other.
I love that that's like a thing in every book we've read so far, of like life-changing experience. Everybody fucks. And yeah, you know, it's not that it's not realistic. It's just like, you know, mandatory sex chapter. It happens. What?
To me, like when my stepdad, and I already said this before in the last episode, but I want to emphasize this now, I chose the section I chose for the reading. When he handed me this book, he said, read the first chapter. If you don't like it, it's not for you. If you want to read chapter two, you won't stop. And I thought that was accurate, where it's like, I couldn't, after I finished chapter one, I'm like, okay, let's bring it. This is awesome. I really feel that the strongest part of this book is the first few pages. Not that I thought the rest of it wasn't strong, but it has such a great hook. Just like you have this feeling throughout the whole book of what the fuck is going on, I need to know more. You feel that most profoundly in the very first few pages.
To Your Scattered Bodies Go by Philip Jose Farmer. Chapter 1.
It's Masterpiece Theater.
His wife had held him in her arms as if she could keep death away from him.
He had cried out, "My God, I am a dead man."
The door to the room had opened, and he had seen a giant, black, one-humped camel outside, and had heard the tinkle of the bells on its harness as the hot desert wind touched them. Then a huge black face topped by a great black turban had appeared in the doorway. The black eunuch had come in through the door, moving like a cloud, with a gigantic scimitar in his hand. Death, the destroyer of delights and the sunderer of society, had arrived at last. Blackness. Nothingness. He did not even know that his heart had given out forever. Nothingness. Then his eyes opened. His heart was beating strongly. He was strong, very strong. All the pain of the gout in his feet, the agony in his liver, the torture in his heart, all were gone. It was so quiet, he could hear the blood moving in his head. He was alone in a world of soundlessness. A bright light of equal intensity was everywhere. He could see, yet he did not understand what he was seeing. What were these things above, below, beside him? Where was he? He tried to sit up and felt numbly a panic. There was nothing to sit up upon because he was hanging in nothingness. The attempt sent him forward and over very slowly, as if he were in a bath of thin treacle. A foot from his fingertips was a rod of bright red metal. The rod came from above, from infinity, and went on down to infinity. He tried to grasp it because it was the nearest solid object, but something invisible was resisting him. It was as if lines of some force were pushing against him, repelling him. Slowly, he turned over in a somersault. Then the resistance halted him with his fingertips.
His fingertips.
Please keep that in with his
fingertips. Please, God. Let's invent them.
With his fingertips. Okay.
Fingertips. Fingertips.
Fingertips.
With his fingertips about 6 inches from the rod, he straightened his body out and moved forward a fraction of an inch. At the same time, his body began to rotate on its longitudinal axis. He sucked in air with a loud sighing noise. Though he knew no hold existed for him, he could not help flailing his arms in panic to try to seize onto something. Now he was face down, or was it up? Whatever the direction, it was opposite of that toward which he had been looking when he had awakened. Not that this mattered. Above him and below him, the view was the same. He was suspended in space, kept from falling by an invisible and unfelt cocoon. 6 feet below him was the body of a woman with a very pale skin. She was naked and completely hairless. She...
There's a bit of Tim Curry there.
She was naked and completely hairless.
She seemed to be asleep. Her eyes were closed and her breasts rose and fell gently.
Oh, yeah. It's not meant to be red pervy, but Hex is doing it anyway.
Keep talking. Don't stop.
I don't know. There's a little pervy. There's a little perv.
There's a little perv.
Tried to grab the rod. He was rotating. I mean, come on.
Yes. And the book actually is very male and very aggressively sexual most of the time. So it's there. It's not not there. But it's not exactly what you're doing, which is fine. I like it.
I'm trying to make this funny somehow, and so I knew there was going to be a lot of nakedness, and so starting all dramatic and then, ooh.
That was a naked woman.
The breasts breathing up and down.
Hey, this is a newborn babe.
This is the same pervy wizard that you had after the crystal debacle with Jamal and Leslie. I'll have you know. It's the exact same wizard.
Her legs were together and straight out. And her arms were by her side. She turned slowly, like a chicken on a spit.
That's my favorite part. When you describe a woman as a chicken, that's what turns me on.
The same force that was rotating her was also rotating him. He spun slowly away from her, saw other naked and hairless bodies. Men, women, and children. opposite him in silent spinning rows. Above him was the rotating naked and hairless body of a Negro. He lowered his head so that he could see along his own body. He was naked and hairless too. His skin was smooth and the muscles of his belly were rigid. And his thighs were packed with strong young muscles.
Oh, strong young muscles.
The veins that had stood out like blue mole ridges were gone. He no longer had the body of the enfeebled and sick 69-year-old man who had been dying only a moment ago. And the 100 or so scars were gone.
69-year-old man. You think that's a coincidence?
It is. That's actually the age he died.
So it is a coincidence. Well, that's why I was asking. Carry on.
I said it is. He realized that there were no old men or women among the bodies surrounding him. All seemed to be about 25 years old, though it was difficult to determine the exact age, since the hairless heads and pubes made them seem older and younger at the same time. He had boasted that he knew no fear. Now fear ripped away the cry forming in his throat. His fear pressed down on him and squeezed the new life from him. He had been stunted at first because he was still living. Then his position in space and the arrangement of his new environment had frozen his senses. He was seeing and feeling through a thick, semi-opaque window. After a few seconds, something snapped inside him. He could almost hear it, as if a window had suddenly been raised. The world took a shape which he could grasp, though he could not comprehend it. Above him, on both sides, below him, as far as he could see, bodies floated. They were arranged in vertical and horizontal rows. The up and down ranks were separated by red rods, slender as broomsticks, one of which was 12 inches from the feet of the sleepers and the other 12 inches from their heads. Each body was spaced about 6 feet from the body above and below and on each side. The rods came up from an abyss without bottom and soared into an abyss without ceiling. That grayness into which the rods and the bodies up and down, right and left disappeared was neither the sky nor the earth. There was nothing in the distance except the lackluster of infinity. On one side was a dark man with Tuscan features. On his other side was an Asiatic Indian, and beyond her, a large Nordic-looking man. Not until the third revolution was he able to determine what was so odd about the man. The right arm, from a point just below the elbow, was red. It seemed to lack the outer layer of skin. A few seconds later, several rows away, he saw a male adult body lacking the skin and all the muscles of the face. There were other bodies that were not quite complete. Far away, glimpsed unclearly, was a skeleton and a jumble of organs inside it. He continued turning and observing while his heart slammed against his chest with terror. But then he understood that he was in some colossal chamber, and that the metal rods were radiating some force that somehow supported and revolved millions, maybe billions, of human beings. Where was this place? Certainly, it was not the city of Trieste of the Austro-Hungarian Empire of 1890.
It's pretty good reading, I must say. I could not have done that.
Yeah, it really gave some depth to those things. That's one of those chapters you read in a book where you're like, okay, wait a minute, what's the distance? Okay, and I'm gonna try to
mentally figure this out.
It is very important what this looks like. They're giving me all this information, but they're giving me so much information that I have to structure it architecturally.
You have to pause to figure it out. Reading that just made me go, like, what was that? That was ninth grade. I'm reading that. I'm like, this is cool. There's a naked lady. Look at the boner. Her breasts are heaving.
See, that kind of happened to me when I just read it the other day, except I got that by when he described the skeleton with the jumbled organs. I was like, ooh, a skeleton with jumbled organs. I gotta go to the bathroom first.
I can take the book with me.
You'll notice that page is a bit sticky.
I did notice that. I didn't want to bring it up.
Well, I brought it up. Get it?
Yes.
Okay.
We're talking about erections.
Erection. Penis.
Yes.
Erection.
That's to your scattered bodies go. And we're going to be discussing what the next book is in the next segment. What do you got for us, Hex?
I have Hunting by Knife City. He's the drummer of Animanaguchi, and it is his solo chiptune set. His self-titled album is his first complete album, and it was released on 8bitpeoples.com. This is the first track on it, and it's pretty damn fun. And I thought... with Richard Francis Burton hunting down the ethicals, that it seemed an appropriate track.
It's reaching, but it's also rad. Let's play it.
Once you start with this voice, you can't stop. Ladies and gentlemen, Hunting by Knife City. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Come on.
Aside from To Your Scattered Bodies Go, what did everybody read?
I've had other projects, including writing, so I'm going to step back and watch y'all talk.
You're just a little writer now.
Yeah.
Y'all is bitches.
This isn't the writing show.
I read something.
What'd you read, Colin?
Unfortunately, no one cares because Colin sucks. Well,
Shut up. Shut up, Hex. When I was on the John, Hex Carter. I was reading an additional book. This is a young adult book by M.T. Anderson, who actually has written a bunch of young adult books. And this one in particular was called Feed. Feed.
You have to say it twice just so we understand what you're saying.
Feed. Actually, it's Feed, Feed. That's the title.
Oh,
okay.
Feed, Feed.
Just kidding. No, it's not. It's just Feed. basically, this book, Feed, is about this...
the verb or the noun?
The noun, yes. The way that this book is basically set up is that it's in the near future, where it's set around these high school students. One of them is named Titus, and the other one is Violet. Those end up being the two main characters. But basically, what ends up happening is... these people, all the high schoolers, and basically every single person has these things called the Feed, and it's basically a computer chip that is inside your brain that connects you to essentially the internet, where you can chat with each other, you can purchase things by just looking at them, you can, you know, access school,
porn,
you can, yeah, porn, all sorts of stuff. Yeah, exactly. So, and that's basically what the Feed is. But anyway, so they end up going to the moon as like an afternoon.
You know, but anyway, hey, they just end up going to the moon, by the way.
Yeah. So they end up going to the moon in this afternoon trip. And on the moon, they actually run into these anti-feed, this anti-feed activist who ends
whalers?
Up... who ends up like giving all of the people who were around to hear him talk a virus.
Ooh,
he implants
that.
A virus, yeah. Through their feed, he implants a virus inside of their brain.
And this is for young adults?
Yes. With that virus, it's a very debilitating virus, and they go to essentially the hospital to get tech support, where their brains are basically put back together in a way so that they can function, because they are so connected to the feed that without the feed, they don't really know what to do with each other or how to interact with each other or how to live.
It's
so,
like if someone hacked the smart brain in an old man's war.
Yes. Yeah. It's like the brain pal. Yeah.
Brain pal.
So Yeah, exactly. So, but this book was written in 2002. And what ends up happening is all of the other high schoolers end up getting fixed. But Violet, who has a lower end feed connection, actually cannot get fixed. Her brain pal, her feed connection is essentially out of warranty. So she is fucked. She is slowly dying, and her brain is slowly shutting down, and her body is slowly shutting down because of this virus put into her by the anti-feed organization.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But the crazy thing about this book is it's written in the style of if people would speak to each other in this kind of truncated leet speak language.
Which I just imagine the entire dialogue of the book when you're reading is like, LOL, WTF, BBQ. And there's like no actual coherent sentences.
No, Brandon, it is written like that. So essentially when you start reading the book, it's very difficult to get into.
So this is like Cocker Orange for kids.
Kind of, yeah. And it's very difficult to get into because it's you can't really understand. A lot of times, some of the acronyms, you don't know what they're describing until much, much later in the book.
So the book is a giant text message.
So it is like Clockwork Orange. Like, I had to read that thing. It wasn't until halfway through that I became fluent in their gobbledygook. And I'm like, well, I got to start it over.
You keep your pinky finger, like, stuck in the dictionary in the back so you can constantly flip back to it.
See, no, I just powered through. And then once I actually understood it, I just hopped back and started over again.
Yeah.
That's how I read it.
It's absolutely crazy. You know, it's a very, very, very crazy book. They end up also, like, they end up taking drugs, and that gives different, like, they go to, like, basically, like, websites like 4chan and stuff like that that give them, like, drug-like effects and stuff like that by connecting to these different things on the feed and all this kind of stuff. So, like, they do, like, high school things, but, like, they will, like, chat with each other via the feed while other people are chatting with other people, and there's this, like, all these side conversations, and, like, they go to a house party where there's no actual music that you can hear with your ears, but you plug into the feed of that house party so that you can then listen to the music that's happening there.
Silent rave.
Yeah, so it's pretty crazy. I mean, what ends up happening, Violet and Titus, well, I'm not going to give away exactly what happens in the end, but I mean, like, there's some other really kind of crazy things that happen in the book where people can, like, similar to Google, where they track what your buying habits are and, like, what you're interested in, you can then have your information, your feeds, sold to different advertising campaigns and different advertising companies so that they can then send you things that are relevant to you so that you would purchase them. So it's crazy. And was written in 2002. And the thing that I find most interesting is that it really, I feel, accurately describes where I believe we could potentially be going to in the future.
That's pretty great, actually. Written in 2002, sounds like it could have been written a day, and showcases a more probable fiction of the future than Old Man's War did when it was written in 2005.
I mean, it's like, I guess to Old Man's War being 1984, this would be Brave New World.
Yeah. No, it's a very interesting book. It's very difficult to read. It's not an easy read by any stretch. I mean, it's not hard, but it's not like you're not going to fly through this book because your brain stops when you're reading these sentences because you can't just flow through each page because it's really difficult to read a lot of what's happening.
It's just because you're old, Colin. Middle schoolers could fly through that fucking book in a day.
Honestly, they probably could.
Yeah.
And I'm on Tumblr enough that I might be able to read it.
Yeah. And it's actually kind of scary because it's so true, you know, with like things like the Google goggles and like the fact that not Google goggles, the Google Glass, and the fact that I know that they are talking about what is it that there are nerve endings or something like that, or some sort of something that is controlled by the human body or something within the human body that can control electrical devices.
Well, there's the cat ears, the remote control cat ears that
powered by the brain,
that powered by, which is the same same brain activity response stuff that they use in the Star Wars Force playset thing, where you basically your brain controls a small fan that allows you to like levitate a ball.
And by the way, if you're really depressed, it's hard to levitate that ball. By the way,
which does not help with your depression.
Is that what you're talking about, Colin? The like the brainwave detection stuff.
I believe so. I mean, like, there's that and some other things that I know that are in existence that I'm sure that John would probably have answers to immediately. But the fact that these things are happening now, and just the fact that I know that with corporate America and with consumerism and advertising, you know that it's going to, some of this stuff is definitely going to be going in the direction. I mean, it's, I mean, they're talking about how within the next 50 years, we're going to be having essentially implants in some way of some sort of electrical, in the electrical field.
Right. You know? Yeah.
So. This book sounds very similar to kind of the technology in Ghosts in the Shell.
Yeah, does very sound very Ghosts in the Shell like.
Which is, they're both based on realistic ideas of the future. So, you know, obviously they're going to end at the same conclusion at some point.
Yeah, but it's basically like these things, the feed goes into the people at birth. There, a lot of people don't have any concept of what the world is like without the feed.
Interesting.
So it really is a dependency. Interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, and you know, also too, like there's stuff like, you know, future stuff like in vitro, like fertilization stuff that, like, you know, is genetically changed so that everyone gets the perfect child and the people who can't pay for it can't get it and yada yada yada. So but I would recommend it. It's a very interesting, very interesting. It doesn't leave you happy.
Does anything, Colin?
Pie.
No.
Sure. Ready Player One, I loved that book. But this book, I mean, I still love it, but it's just very... Yeah, I'm looking up some words on Wikipedia now, like some of the vocabulary.
Well, LOL,
like,
means laugh out loud, Colin. And then you got Raffle.
Like, no, anyway, so the like, you have like a unit, like a male is called a unit, and a unit is a female. Null is a feeling of boredom or disinterest. Bone sprocket is a feeling of shame or humiliation. Meg is an intensifier equivalent to very. So like, that's Meg awesome, or like, that's Meg cool. So like, there's all sorts of that kind of stuff that you just have to use context clues to be able to figure out.
do they use the terms crash the mode at all?
No.
Okay. It just sounds
like it's a high five.
That is so mode, Brandon. That is so mode.
Yeah, it's better than Crash.
So that was Feed and by M.T. Anderson, and I would recommend it, but you don't have to take my word for it.
Book I'm in the middle of reading right now is called WYSIWYG, and it's by Ed Piskor. It's a WYSIWYG Portrait of a Serial Hacker. I picked it up at Heroes Con, and I've already talked about it on Nerdy Show Comic Show a little bit, so I'm not going to go too into it. It's scientific, so book club readers are probably interested in it, and it's pretty awesome. It's fiction, but it's based very, very heavily on real-world hacking from the early 80s, of like starting with basic phone hacking, like just kind of tricking the system and escalating to computers and so on, and a young man becoming basically a serial hacker of the 1990s, and how he got there. And it's based on a lot of the people who actually live this lifestyle and a lot of their stories. And it's a really good read so far. I'm really enjoying it. The book that I did read in full so far is actually our next book for the community read-along.
Woo!
And it's called More Stories About Spaceships and Cancer by Casper Kelly.
Yeah, I read the first chapter of this because Cap sent it to me. Oh my God. This is the weirdest and most fun thing that I have read in a really long time.
Can you explain to the good folks at home who Casper Kelly is?
Yes, yes.
Why they should be excited?
Yeah, Casper Kelly is a writer for a bunch of Adult Swim shows. He's been working with Cartoon Network for a very long time. If you guys remember, back when Blair Witch came out, there was a live-action Scooby-Doo thing featuring a live-action video but animated characters that was a parody of the Blair Witch Project, the gang drives out in the Mystery Machine, like... running through the forest and everything.
Yeah. I remember that now.
That's Casper Kelly's project. He won an Annie for that. And he's worked on Adult Swim shows like Squidbilly, Stroker and Hoop, Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Harvey Birdman, and others. Like some of my favorite shows. So I was super excited to check this book out. And then when I did, I was just floored. It's a collection of short stories, and they're all wildly original. In fact, one of them ties into a discussion we had in the last episode, something that I'm very concerned with, which is, you know, other themes that we talk about on a regular basis here at Nerdy Show, augmentation, and how an augmentation to the human body could eliminate our need to poop. And there's a story called Taking a Shit in the Future. And it's about the societal situation of what if that happens? How do things progress for humanity when bit by bit people just stop pooping?
I won't get any more reading done.
obviously.
It's all confronted there, and the entire book is actually framed by a Cryptkeeper style introduction from a a skeleton man and a bunch of other characters. All the stories are very different from each other, but a lot of them actually do tag back to something that to the singularity themes that we talk about, of like kind of where our generation's psyche will be as life expectancy starts getting longer and longer, and the concept of the human experience starts changing drastically. There's also, on a completely different side of things, there's a story called Sneezy, which is all about the dwarf from Snow White, Sneezy, and his feelings towards Snow White.
Yeah, I mean, there's also the very first chapter in the book is the sensitive person's joke book, and it's a joke. The joke is a man and a duck walk into a bar. The bartender says, "I'm sorry, we don't serve gorillas." "This isn't a gorilla. He's a duck," says the man. The bartender replies, "I was talking to the duck."
What?
That's how the book starts.
And that's how the book starts. Now, here's the thing. That chapter is about all of those people in it. It's about the bartender, the duck, and the man. It then continues with the man and the duck. Sit quietly for a moment. Somewhere in the distance, the pool balls collide. Like, it goes on after this joke. And then it also talks about, like, there's a rabbi, and it's hilarious.
And let me actually read you the table of contents. "Help, I'm trapped in the table of contents." "No, seriously. These are not short story titles. Flip through the book and page numbers don't even correspond to anything. Being attacked by swarms of spider/bat-like things. No, I have no idea how I got here. I'm bleeding and low on bullets. Here comes another wave. Fuck. Hold on. I think the page numbers correspond to the number of creatures attacking each successive wave. Hell, shit. Try shaking the book. Try something. Blow on the pages. Not sure if you did it or not. It didn't work. Almost out of story title slots that I can use to communicate. I'll save the last bullet for myself. Acknowledgements." This book is amazing, and I want everybody to read it. In the next
episode, I'll have you know that this book is for you.
Wait, who? Me?
Yeah, that's the dedication for you.
Okay.
So yeah, I—that's
brilliant.
I absolutely love this book, and we are going to have Casper Kelly on the next episode of Nerdy Show Book Club. It's a great read. I read it in one sitting. It helped that I was on an airplane, but it would have been really hard to stop if I was anywhere else.
It was
admittedly,
a long 8-hour sitting.
So that is the next Nerdy Show community read along book. More stories about spaceships and cancer by Casper Kelly. If you go on his website, CasperKelly.com, you can actually buy an autographed copy for $15.
What a deal!
And it comes in other formats as well. So we'll have links to all that on the Nerdy Show Book Club page, along with links to everything else we've talked about in this episode. Let's cut to a song, and then when we get back, we're going to read from an adaptation of a film.
Well, since you talked about Ed Pisker, I thought I'd bring up Adam Warrock. Because as we're recording this, his donation drive is coming to an end. And a part of his donation drive was that Adam Warrock wrote an autobiographical comic about himself. And it was drawn by Ed Pisker, the artist and writer of WYSIWYG. So the song we have to go out of this segment.
Beep. So I'm just making noise at this point.
Is this song, which he kicked off the donation drive this year with his first ever professional music video, which is a music video to this song. Enjoy.
Never tried and lie. try and be the best, so I do that. Got a couple fans, do my best and stay true to that. True that, I rarely look back. Sometimes I gotta laugh, cause these people dig my tracks, but they say they hate rap. And I don't even rap, man, I'm singing on these tracks off key, because the damn melody distracts from what I truly wanna say. And if you missed it, probably wasn't even important, cause I don't really revisit it. Each song's a tombstone, a grip for those feelings that I'm not fully equipped to deal with. And it screams out my belly and throat until it quits. Then I just post it up and say forget about it. Telegrams, they tell me, Adam, man, I don't understand why you seem so down, cause your future's so bright, man, I'm telling y'all, it's hard to sleep at night, all I'm tossing and turning because the fire is burning and I ain't earning enough to pay the bills to pile up, and the only thing that makes me feel better is sending another song to Michael Killam, hear him say he hates it, and so I got up and wrote this, quote this, after this whole ride is over, hopeless, cause I ain't Hova, I'm just a man doing all that he can to survive long enough to write another damn song.
And those lonely nights, yeah, it's when I stay up and write this song. It's when I'm losing my sleep and write this song.
Before we dive in to our film adaptation reading, that's a little cue as to what we're going to be reading.
Dive in.
We're gonna just do a little bit of community news here. We recently concluded our RPG support drive, which you mentioned prior, and the winner of that was Paranoia XP. So we're going to be playing a Paranoia one shot. I'll hail the computer. But leading up to that, there were a lot of great messages that were included with support funds from our fans, and so I wanted to read some of them. The lead contender was Dresden Files, and a big sponsor of that was Trench 88. Dresden Files was sponsored by Gary Ure, Trench 88, Caitlin Kruger, Ethan Kruger, and Oberlock. Trench 88, the lead contributor to that, said, as a man who has literally laughed in the face of death, I say fuck the computer. In all honesty, I'd rather listen to you guys play Mass Effect or Serenity, but maybe next time. I'm supporting the Dresden Files, keeping it interesting until the end. Connor yes, Benson, so one of the last guys to contribute to us in the support drive, when it was clearly Dresden Files or Paranoia XP, by hundreds of dollars, he threw a dollar to Dragon Age. Nah. He said, for Dragon Age, still time for a comeback.
It was not. There was not.
Stuart Edney contributed to Gamma World, and Mass Effect was sponsored by Mauron and Trench 88, and Trench 88 also did chip in for Serenity early on.
I love you, Mauron.
What's his name?
Mauron.
Mauron. Mauron. I love him.
Paranoia XP was the fan favorite by a landslide. Both Paranoia and Dresden Files were actually suggested by fans. We put out a list of potential systems for us to play with, and
our fans said, "Fuck you, we know better
than
you."
It's true.
They sure did. And Paranoia actually sounds like it's going to be fantastic. I'm excited for it. It was sponsored by Gary Ure, Tolan, Viral Demon, Two Thumbs, Gimpy Joe, Anduin, Stuart Edney, Arceus, Pierre Olivier,
the third,
and Kongas 88.
Donkey Kongas 88.
Oh God.
Viral Demon said, I see things are getting interesting. I'll put this down for Paranoia XP and have Audrey play friend computer. Audrey is, of course, if you've listened to the season finale of Mark with the C's, the Real Congregation podcast here on Nerdy Show, you know that Audrey is the text-to-speech robot who ran Mark's finale because Mark was asked by the doctor to not use his voice and give it a little bit of rest. So
she's a very good host.
Audrey is a good host.
Very good host.
So I think we're going to see Audrey make her return to the Nerdy Show airwaves in the form of Paranoia XP as the computer. We got to talk with Mark about that. We'll see if he'll let her out of the box. But Audrey was a good host, so maybe she can handle this acting gig. I know she's really... She's very interested in success in dollar bills. Pierre says, donating for Paranoia because, one, I like hearing my name on the podcast, and two, even though the books are amazing, fuck Dresden Files. Giffy Joe said, Paranoia XP is exactly what I needed to start the long path of shutting you up and giving you my money. This is his first contribution. It was the very first system I DM'd, and damn it if this won't get me to pull it out again. Whoa.
how long has it been since you pulled it out?
Wait, is he pulling it out and then fucking the Dresden File books? Because, man, you're going to get a fucking paper cut. I'm telling you what.
Well, that's two different people, but maybe they can get together on this.
Yeah, there you go.
Meet on the forums or something. Hookups. Forum hookups. Nerdy forum hookups. Don't do that, please. Please don't do that on the forums.
Don't make, too late.
Don't make forum babies. Do not make forum babies.
Anduin says, Paranoia XP, because the prospect of insanity overwhelms me, and maybe this electroshock sedative will finally calm my nerves. Arkea said, like any fine, upstanding, totally non-mutant citizen, I am voicing my support for Paranoia. All hail the mighty, all-knowing computer. May its warm and life-giving glow smite its enemies forever. Stuart Edney, who previously contributed towards Gamma World, something we're also very excited to play someday, said, stick it on Paranoia XP. It's a good game and deserves playing. Tolan contributed to Paranoia and said, I found Paranoia works well in the one-shot format, so this should be fun. After all, fun is mandatory. The computer says so, and the computer is your friend. Do you doubt the computer? Doubting the computer is treason. Report all treason to friend computer and be exterminated. And remember, if you weren't guilty, we wouldn't be interrogating you.
Oh my god.
Are you excited for this,
that
Brandon?
That person tried a scenario. Yeah, I am.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
And we also got some amazing support from a guy named... I'm going to try to say this right. Gui Nero Loki. Loki to his friends. I finished episode 21 of Dungeons & Doritos today, and then started it again. Nerdy Show, mostly Dungeons & Doritos, has become the means by which I pass the time in my truck while I'm out on service calls. You fine gentlemen, occasionally ladies, and outright bastards are doing wonderful work. I'm looking forward to the Paranoia XP one-shot, or more, as it looks like it's going to win. It's a fun system, though I've mainly only played the Zap style of the game. I can't reveal any more, and I've probably already said too much, as knowledge of the rules is treason. The computer's your friend, trust computer.
I think we met him at the PAX meetup. I remember talking to that guy, and he just, like, he had, his job kept him in a truck going around doing tasks all day, and just headphones, listening to Nerdy Show nonstop. Mm-hmm. It does sound like horrible, though.
Thanks, everyone, for writing in. We love when you send notes, funny notes with your support, and we also love when you just write in to say, hey, it's always great. So, we read a book from the Riverworld series.
Yeah.
So now, we're gonna read the... novelization of Waterworld. Are you excited? Colin, who's this Waterworld novelization by?
This is written by a novel by Max Allen Collins, based on the motion picture written by Peter Rader and David Twathy. It was 10 cents.
I had no idea that Twathy was involved with the Waterworld.
That's Twathy.
No wonder I loved it.
Just as the hourglass ran out of fish eggs, tripping the gear lever, pulling in the drag line, the salvage bag popped up on the surface near the trimaran, and the mariner's head bobbed up. The bag was brimming with booty. The silver disc labeled Compact Disc Digital Audio. What had these been for, he wondered. A knobless square red plastic chunk with a grey screen. This was labeled Etch-a-Sketch. Some empty glass bottles, some plastic bottles too, and more. A good haul, too much in fact, for all of it to make it to the salvage pouch. He pulled himself up on the deck, dripping wet. Flushed with success, depositing a few of the choicer items onto the deck of the central hull. Some of these were too large for the pouch anyway. A bent ski pole, a broken ski, a discolored pair of ski boots, joined by the laces, the first time in all his treasure trawling that he'd ever snagged a pair of shoes. The rest of his bounty remained in the floating bag. He'd have to tug that up on deck too, or before long it would drift out of reach. But he allowed himself a moment to focus on one tiny precious item. He'd run across one of these before, and he'd seen other traders with working examples, but he had himself never found one that would work. A bick it was labeled, but the mariner had called them lighters. These round little sticks. He flicked it. A flame erupted from the bick's tip, and a smile erupted on the mariner's leathery face. Now wasn't this surprise? His attention snapped at the dual sound of the creak of a boat and the churning of the wake it was creating in these still waters. He flew to the harpoon gun mounted on the bow and swung it towards the sounds. Was this a boat approaching or departing? Departing. The mariner instantly knew. This patched-together, clumsy-looking sloop, smaller than his ship, must have glided up while he was below the surface. Had its one-man captain and crew, an Asian drifter in scroungy scraps of leather and cloth, taken the opportunity in the mariner's absence to board the ship for some quick looting? The Asian at the tiller of the sloop froze in the sights of the harpoon gun. His nervous smile was multicolored, running mostly to shades of yellow and green, but many-toothed. Cautiously, he raised his arms.
I didn't board you,
the Asian said in Hindi.
I wouldn't do such a thing.
The mariner kept a gun trained on the drifter, but risked a glance around the trimaran. Nothing seemed missing. He lowered the gun slightly, but kept the gun sight trained on the man.
You were down there a long time,
the Asian said, still speaking Hindi.
Thought maybe something happened to you, Mr. Burton.
Or were you hoping?
The mariner, a fish boy from Atlantis, replied in the same tongue.
Sorry. Whoa, that's not in the book.
I make some changes. It's better this way.
No English. No English, Mr. Burton. You have brought upon this world to make me learn English, Mr. Burton.
The Asian said, switching to a heavily accented English.
I wish bad luck on no man, except maybe smokers.
Smokers were the worst breed of pirate in Waterworld. Barbarians in the sway of a vicious madman called the Deacon. The mariner took a step away from his harpoon gun, a sign of good faith.
That depends on whether you consider smokers men.
More like beasts.
The Asian said, suspicion tightening his still smiling face.
But tell me, how does a man stay underwater so long? So a longer time.
Hull's busted!
The mariner said with a casual gesture.
Hull's so big, there's room to stick your head up and breathe!
Bad luck!
The Asian said, shaking his head. He lowered his hands cautiously.
But you know, the slavers are producing a good trade of poxy these days, Mr. Burton.
The salvage bag of booty was floating past the sloop. Did the Asian drifter notice it? The mariner said.
But it would cost dearly.
A handful of dirt, or maybe that wind chime, or a breeder, if you're the kind of man who deals in the flesh.
The mariner watched his booty bag sail away. Caught by the current.
Bitch, watch your booty bag float away. Bitch.
Girl, the mariner watched his booty bag sail away.
Okay. The mariner watched his booty bag sail away, caught by the current, that deceptively calm current.
What are you doing?
He asked the drifter.
Oh, this and that.
What were you doing waiting alongside my boat?
The Asian's grin returned.
Just that, waiting for you.
For me?
For you are not to come up here.
The Asian shrugged.
Then I would have aboarded your ship.
The booty bag was still in sight. If his guest would only leave, the mariner could retrieve it. But he revealed no anxiety as he said,
Your boat looks familiar. I've seen it before, but not you.
The Asian shrugged again.
Its previous owner didn't need it no more.
Why is that?
He was dead, English. Took it legal salvage rights.
The Asian nodded toward the trimaran.
You had another hour
before you traded up again?
That's right.
This time he shrugged with only one shoulder.
Just improving my means, can't blame a man.
At least you waited, I owe you that much.
Raggedy half-gloved hands rubbed the air.
No, you owe me nothing, English.
I got all the supplies I need. See, I just come from an atoll, 8 days due east, if you're interested.
The mariner nodded and looked towards the eastern horizon, watching his salvage bag drift away. Almost absently, he said,
Two of our kind meat. Something's got to be exchanged.
I know the code as well as you, English.
The mariner's eyes remained on the horizon, but the bag was no longer his main concern. Casually, he said,
You could have taken my boat. I should repay you.
The Asian waved that off too readily.
Tell you what, give you this one for free.
Something else out there on the horizon.
Nothing's free in Waterworld.
The mariner said. Two puffs of smoke curled from two distant dots on the water. But across that water came a sound that seemed much closer than those dots' engines. Missing badly, but at full throttle. The Asian heard it too, and whipped his head around towards where the mariner was watching.
Smokers, Mr. Batten.
The Asian whispered hollowly, eyes wide with fear. He wet a finger to the air, checking the wind.
Just enough wind to get away.
Luck to you,
the mariner said.
And to you.
The Asian said, swinging the boom out, adjusting his sail, and immediately the scraggly sloop was tacking off. The mariner was looking at his floating salvage bag, and now the Asian has paused in his zigzag course long enough to spot it as well.
It's not worth it, English,
he called, shaking his head so violently his body shook too, and two small, almost round green objects tumbled out of his ragged shirt on the sloop's deck. The mariner flashed a look at his lime tree and saw it had been stripped of its oh-so-very valuable fruit. But the sloop was on its way now, and its raggedy captain was again shrugging and flashing his colorful, tooth-scarce grin.
See, you paid me after all, English,
he called. The mariner didn't waste a curse on the sea scum. He had other things to do. Turning to his steering console, he threw levers that converted the ship into something quite unexpected. The egg-beater sail folded into the mast, which extended to twice its height, and the boom appeared from out of the center of the hull's deck. Sails unfurled, jib mainsail mizzen, as the traveler suddenly, almost magically, transformed into a sleek racing yacht. Yanking the tiller in lines, the mariner headed straight for the bobbing booty bag, and the tamarind... The tamarind cutting across...
Trimaran. The monkey.
The trimaran cutting across the glass surface like a speeding arrow. Others were bearing down on the booty bag too. Those dots on the horizon had blossomed into a horrible quartet. The four barely dressed brutes were smokers, as the drifter had called it, as fierce as they were stupid. They rode go-juice, burning water sleds, known in the ancient times as jet skis, whose snarling, smoke-pluming engines tore the plastered afternoon to shreds as they bore in on the bobbing pouch. The mariner knew how savage these dim-witted, muscle-bound marauders were. Being smarter wasn't enough. He'd have to be faster, too. He worked the tiller, trimming the sails, doing the work of an entire crew in fleeting instants. The trimaran was flying at 40 knots when the ship rounded the salvage bag. A long gaff pole in hand, he scrambled out onto an outrigger hull and slagged the bag, even as the ship was coming about hard.
Sure was coming about hard. About this hard.
The trimaran was going in the opposite direction. As the four pirates on jet skis almost tumbled off their perches, bringing their little crafts around to take pissed-off pursuit, making foamy wakes...
making foamy wakes their cruises...
Has the Beatles now, Ringo.
Making foamy wakes their curses a blur of guttural sound blending with the growl of their air-fouling engines. Up ahead you could see her, the Asian drifter sloop. He charted a collision course and was damn near on top of the drifter before the half-dozing man, a half-eaten lime in one hand, realized those crystal-clear engine sounds weren't coming to him across the water, but were perilously close. The Asian tossed the lime like it had suddenly turned red-hot and tried desperately to trim his sails, yanking the sheets to pick up some speed, but the mariner's trimaran was closing in on him, and the smokers were ripping across the water, zeroing in on the mariner's stern. The Asian let out a pitiful yelp.
Aye! Ha-ha!
That didn't have time to turn into a scream as the trimaran, on its collision course, suddenly sheeted in...
suddenly shitted in on one side, drenching the sloop's deck and its captain. Fuck me! God, anyway, sorry.
As the Trimaran, on its collision course, suddenly sheeted in on one side, drenching the sloop's deck and its captain, lifting the nearest outrigger hull over the sloop like the wing of a bird. But that wing snapped, the smaller boat's mainmast cracking it too. Looking back as the crestfallen captain of the now floundering sloop, its mainsail an impotent thing, flapping on the deck, the mariner raised a scolding finger and sent the man a stern look.
You don't break the code!
It was a lesson the drifter was unlikely to live to profit from, considering the whooping war cries of the savages who were now bearing down on him.
Whoop! Whoop! Whoop!
The smokers had, as the mariner knew they would, abandoned their pursuit of him in favor of swooping in on this easier wounded prey.
You shouldn't have taken the limes!
The mariner said to the air. After all, nothing was free in Waterworld.
And that concludes our Nerdy Show book club. Now, we actually recorded that thing twice because we came up with a funny idea. And so if you send us support, you will get the entire alternate reading, both of them equally funny for very different reasons. So thanks so much for listening. Be sure to pick up Casper Kelly's book, More Stories About Spaceships and Cancer, and read it along with us for the next episode. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Hex.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Colin.
And taking us out is Come Sail Away by Styx.
Set an open course for the virgins.
Oh, my God.
I've got to be free.
Free to face the light that's ahead of me.
Something, something.
On board, I'm a mariner.
So climb aboard.
Dry land doesn't exist. I'm sure you know.
I've tried. Oh, how I've tried.
The carrier!
Something about angels and spaceships. To the sky!
I thought they were angels, but to my surprise, oh. I climbed aboard a starship and headed to the sky.
The skies! Come sail away, come sail away, come sail away with me, with me! Come sail away.
Let's not play the song, let's just do this.
Okay. Okay, we're done. That's what you've listened to, bud.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Nerdy Show. Nerdy Show is brought to you by a comic shop, Nerdapalooza, and the Oviedo branch of Play and Trade, and listeners like you. If you enjoyed what you heard, support Nerdy Show by telling a friend, or better yet, pick up some Nerdy Show merch at the Nerdy Show store, or donate directly for secret nerdy goodies. For more episodes of Nerdy Show, Dungeons and Doritos, comics, videos, and more, visit nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to all Nerdy Show podcasts via the iTunes store. For the latest news and updates, follow us on Twitter at Nerdy Show or friend us on Facebook and get social with other Nerdy Show listeners at nerdyshow.com/forums. Contact us with questions or comments at info@nerdyshow.com. Take
care. Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.